So the first thing that's going to happen is there will be a test. And I'm taking out of your book there, Bobby, we're going to do a test. Has everybody got one of these valuable documents that you never believe are really valuable? And if you do, keep them closed. Close yours, Barry. No cheating. Everybody keep it closed. Now, this is the skill testing question. Is that right? What time is the Tuesday night fellowship group going to meet this Tuesday at my house? You're professional. You don't get... What was that, Laura Lee? Laura Lee gets the prize if there was one because she really reads this valuable document. And this is a very important fact. On Tuesday, there will not be a meeting at my house on 511 Maria Grove. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning, because this is kind of a major difficulty in my life, and I want to share this with you. Because every Tuesday, I know that these special people are coming to my house. And so every Tuesday morning, I get up and I wash the floors and I vacuum the carpet and I kind of fuss around the bathroom a little bit. And is this really loud? It's really bad. Yeah, it's annoying. I'm sure it's annoying to you. Ah, that. Thanks a lot, hon. Okay, I'm okay. I'm loud. Okay. And I always make sure that there are maybe flowers on the coffee table because these special people are coming into my house. Well, now it's summertime, and as you have so cleverly discovered through this valuable document, which you need to get every Sunday, it's not happening. And now I have a real quandary because Tuesday was really the only day I cleaned my house, to be quite honest. And now I don't quite know what to do. And it's a problem. I have had an experience of that, which I'll talk about later, and it's not going to happen, Nancy. Cleaning house is a really heavy subject. And if you Spencer girls at the back think it doesn't apply to you, I've got news for you. You better listen. You'll be glad you did. And you men who are sitting around sort of thinking this is a woman's talk, not so, as you will see. I have to just share with you, though, I had a very strange friend way back, a little Irish lady, and she used to talk about her dirty friends, and she always referred to them that way. She'd say, you know, my dirty friends, Joe and Jane, whatever their names were. And so all of us always thought about them as the dirty friends. And she told us, whether it was true or not, that there was dust on the soap in their bathroom. Now that's dirty, hey? And I'm hoping that all the Tuesdays that go through summer will not lead to this place where my soap is really dusty and dirty. We'll find out in August, I guess. But the secret of housekeeping is one that we need to share. Housekeeping is important. And if you men, as I say, thought you weren't involved, I can tell you about a lot of men who really are good housekeepers. But the first person I was thinking about was that little guy, one of my favorite men in the Bible, who he was really... something challenged. Anyway, he was very short. I can't ever think of the clever phrases. But horizontally challenged? Something like that. Anyway, he was small. He was a small man. You got it, eh? And one day he wanted really, really badly to see Jesus. And because he was the most unpopular man in town, because he was a tax collector, and none of us need explanation about that one, he was probably pushed out of the way and pummeled and stamped on, and he couldn't get near the front of the crowd to see Jesus. And you all know the story. He climbed up a tree, which was very undignified for him, especially in those long robe things they used to wear in those days, so that he could see Jesus. And then Jesus did typically the most unexpected thing. Instead of stopping and talking to all the people who'd been standing on the edge of the road like we do for the parade, he went right past them and went up to this nasty little man up the tree and said, "Hey, Zacchaeus, come on down." And he invited himself to tea. And I think I've mentioned this before. I always think about Mrs. Zac. You know, she's probably at the back there terribly embarrassed because her husband's up a tree in the first place, because that's not the right way to behave when you're the tax collector. And now somebody's coming to her house for tea. She was not expecting them. She's like me. She only cleans on certain days, and she never has company because nobody would go to their house because nobody liked them in the town. So I always picture Mrs. Zac hightailing it across the town to the house and quickly pushing things under the couch and closing cupboard doors and wiping things off. And oh, there's a dirty diaper on the floor in the bathroom. And you know the kind of thing that we do when we get unexpected guests. We clean up, but it's not very adequate. It's not very helpful. Well, again, men, if you think it doesn't apply to you, I can think of someone else who had to do some major house cleaning. It not only applies to men and teenagers and women, of course, it applies to royalty. Because I want to tell you about a king who had to do huge house cleaning, and he did a wonderful job. But first of all, we need to look at his background, because his dad was not a good housekeeper. As a matter of fact, he was the messiest, most awful, most despicable of kings. His name was Ahaz. And you'll find out the story of Ahaz and his son Hezekiah, on our slides. And I also want to say this is the first time I've ever been able to use slides. And I want to thank Jane, who will be here later, because she put them together for me. So, and if we could have the first slide, and don't feel you have to read along, because I sometimes feel like we don't get the story as well when we're trying to keep up with the reader. But this is very small print that Jane gave me, so I will have to read it. So this is the story of Ahaz, or a verse about Ahaz, who was a rotten, bad king. You know, in Judah and Israel, they either had very good kings or terrible kings. He was in the terrible category. And he went after other gods, false gods, and he did some awful things. And God punished him by making him lose in battle. But instead of turning back to God, he went and built altars to the gods of the people who had defeated him. He didn't think straight, Ahaz. Anyway, this verse will give us an idea of the kind of thing he did, and you can decide whether he was a good housekeeper. Ahaz gathered together the furnishings from the temple of God and cut them in pieces. He shut the doors of the Lord's temple and set up altars at every street corner in Jerusalem. In every town in Judah, he built high places to burn sacrifices to other gods, and he aroused the anger of the Lord, the God of his ancestors. Now, the temple is God's house. In their eyes, it was the place where God came to live. And Ahaz, who was the king, was supposed to be serving this God. And so he cut the furniture in pieces. He threw out all the holy things. He brought in these evil things that were for worship of other gods, and he put them into God's temple. He broke down the doors. Ahaz, I would think you would agree, was not a good housekeeper. Could we have the next slide, hon? So he had a son whose name was Hezekiah. Now Hezekiah was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 29 years. His mother's name was Abijah, daughter of Zechariah. And he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father or forefather David had done. In the first month of the first year of his reign, in other words, no sooner had he got on the throne, he opened the doors of the temple of the Lord and repaired them. He brought in the priests and the Levites, assembled them in the square on the east side and said, "Listen to me, Levites, consecrate yourselves. Prepare yourselves, make yourselves holy. And consecrate the temple of the Lord, the God of your ancestors, and remove all defilement from the sanctuary." In other words, let's start cleaning house. The first month he was in position of royalty, and he'd had a father who was a pretty nasty man. So this says a great deal for Hezekiah's character as well as his housekeeping ability. Okay, could we have the next one? When they had assembled their fellow Levites and consecrated themselves, they went in to purify the temple of the Lord, as the king had ordered, following the word of the Lord. The priests went into the sanctuary of the Lord to purify it. They brought out to the courtyard everything unclean that they found in the temple of the Lord. The Levites took it, and they carried it out to the Kidron Valley. I have visions of every time you have to call your son-in-law or your brother or your dad to bring a big truck and take all your stuff out to the dump, you know, sort of like taking your stuff out to the Kidron Valley. They took all the garbage that was not of the Lord and they got rid of it. They began the consecration on the first day of the first month, and by the eighth day, that's a whole week of working, they reached the portico of the Lord. And for eight more days, they consecrated the temple of the Lord itself, finishing on the 16th day of the first month. So within a half a month, they got things clean. They got rid of the garbage. They consecrated. They dedicated this place back to God. Then they can have the next one. Sorry, Grace. They went into King Hezekiah and reported, "We have purified the entire temple of the Lord, the altar of burnt offering with all its utensils, and the table for setting out the consecrated bread with all its articles. We have prepared and consecrated all the articles that King Ahaz removed in his unfaithfulness while he was king. They are now in front of the Lord's altar." And this is when the party happens, sort of like a picnic day. Eh? The last slide, please, hon. Hezekiah gave the order to sacrifice the burnt offering on the altar. As the offering began, singing to the Lord began also, accompanied by trumpets and the instruments of David, king of Israel. The whole assembly bowed in worship while the musicians played and the trumpets sounded. All this continued until the sacrifice of the burnt offering was completed. And when the offerings were finished, the king and everyone present with him knelt down and worshipped. And King Hezekiah and his officials ordered the Levites to praise the Lord with the words of David and Asaph, the seer. So they sang praises with gladness and bowed down and worshipped. Now I kind of feel like Hezekiah should get the Good Housekeeping Award of Approval or whatever it was, because didn't he do a good job? It was such a mess. God had been shut out from his own temple. The doors had been wrecked and ruined. Defiled items had been brought in and put in front of the altar. And Hezekiah came, and within 15 days, he had that place spanking clean and blessed and consecrated. And there was singing, and there was music, and there was worship. And God's house was ready for the special guest to come in. And that's kind of how I feel about Tuesday nights. It needs to be clean when my special friends come to visit. And we all know that feeling. When we have a special guest, when we have someone coming, we want things to be clean and fresh and welcoming. Now, the temple was God's dwelling place in Israel. But Paul tells us these important words, and this is what really I want us to remember today. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit lives in you? And again, he reinforces that. Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have received from God? And that had me wondering when I thought about the temple and how Hezekiah made it so perfect and so clean and so welcoming to the Lord. And I wondered how my temple stands up. Do I rush around and make things clean and ready for the Lord if he's going to be part of me, if he's going to live in me? When the Holy Ghost is the resident, how does the house look? Could I possibly fall into the ways of that rotten King Ahaz and bring in stuff into my temple that is ugly and unworthy and hurtful to the Lord? So I thought we should look at that this morning and do sort of a housekeeping check. The first thing that these magazines that tell you how to make a beautiful home will always emphasize is the entrance is really important. And you will remember that Hezekiah immediately mended the doors because they were broken and they couldn't open. And in theory, God could not enter into his own temple. And I remember that verse, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. And if anyone opens to me and welcomes me in, I will come in and sup with him." Just like he did with little Zacchaeus. "I'm coming to be in your house." I think we do have to remember that sometimes our door is not as welcoming to the Lord as at other times. You know those doors that stick and you've got to give them a little push sometimes? We may need oil. We may need oil of penitence, of humility, of confession, to make that door open wide so that the Lord can come in to this temple that is us. But when you get inside, now I'm sure this never happens to you, but in my house there are sometimes these strange little occupants. They're called dust bunnies. And you know what a dust bunny is? It's the sign that you've kind of let things slide a little bit in dark corners and around the bend and underneath things, like under sofas and under beds. There's actually a story told of a little girl who said to her mum, "Mommy, is it true we're made of dust?" And her mum said, "Yes, dear, that's what the Bible says." And she said, "Well, I think there's a man under my bed right now." That could happen in my house by the end of August if I don't mend my ways. Dust bunnies are the little things we think aren't important that we don't get into, the corners that we ignore when we're doing the center of the room. And dust bunnies grow. They start out small. Like if you've got a cat or a dog, it'll be a little bit of fur, and then it'll roll along. I think they have movement because they roll around and they gather up other bits of dust, and they become big dust bunnies sometimes. And it's very embarrassing if somebody gets into one of your corners that you have missed, and there's a creature sitting there in the corner. Make sure we don't let the little things, and I think this is my message to myself, like taking time for quiet prayer instead of watching TV. And Bobby, what you said this morning really resonated there. Letting things slide is what happens when dust bunnies appear. They just love it when we leave stuff, like being here on a Sunday morning, contacting other people, doing the things we know we need to do but aren't super important in our minds. That's how dust bunnies grow. We're nurturing them. Our habits, our conversation, our activities, our priorities. And in Ephesians, it tells us we are God's holy people. And dust bunnies don't fit in with that description. The next thing that's any housekeeper's the bane of their lives is muddy footprints coming in from outside. You know when you've got little guys? Anybody relating there? You know, they're outside on rainy days, and then they come in and they never take off their shoes. Or the plumber comes to fix the sink, and he comes in with his big boots, and he walks all over your carpet and just where you washed the floor a few minutes ago, and he leaves this track of brown, gushy mud all over your floor. It's tracking in the garbage, actually, that he's picked up outside. We're bringing in the dirt from the world around us sometimes into God's temple. And I've got a confession to make here, because I realized how I had actually done this in a very real way just a few weeks ago. I kind of like to watch movies on Netflix because I don't have a lot of channels on TV. And you know how you can get hooked on those ones that go on and on and on. And I was watching a show, and it had a good storyline. It was interesting. The actors were excellent. And I really was getting into the story and wanting to know what happened. And, of course, it had about 16 episodes, I think. So I watched the first episode, and I thought, ooh, they really swear a lot in the show. And then by the second show, I was kind of hooked because by then the plot was coming in front of me. I could see not what was going to happen, but I was wanting to find out what was going to happen. But the swearing was incredible. Like, the one word was used at least two or three times in everybody's language, in everybody's sentence. And I thought to myself, well, that's the way the world is these days. It's sad and it's ugly, and why do they have to do it? It's not necessary. But it was such a good story, I had to keep watching. And then one morning, I woke up, and it was one of those lovely mornings when the sun was shining, and I woke up, and running through my mind was this one word that I would never, ever allow my children to say. And it just kept on coming back. And I could hear it in little sentences, and it was popping here and there. You know, when you see comics and you see all the stuff running around in people's heads, that's how it felt. And I was only half awake, and it was already there. And I knew that I'd brought in a bunch of mud from outside, and it was tracking through my temple, and I was in trouble, and I needed to get out the mop. And so I will never know how that series ended, because I knew I couldn't go back to watching it. It was just infiltrating my life, and it was worrisome, and I hated it. And I think that is what happens. We pick up stuff from outside so easily, and we don't want to be those Christians who don't have anything to do with people who don't think the same way as we do. And we live and we move with people with different mindsets and different values and different habits, and we love them. Many of them are really important in our lives. But it's so easy to pick up those habits and those mindsets and the stuff we've seen on Netflix or on Facebook, that the arguments and the thoughts. And we have to be really careful. Watch the doorway. Don't let those muddy boots in. Be a good housekeeper. I've learned my lesson for this time around. It will doubtless not be the last time that my floor gets muddied up. But in Philippians, there is this beautiful verse, and it says, whatever is true or noble or right or pure or lovely or admirable, excellent or praiseworthy, think on those things. And I think we really have to keep a control going to make sure the mud doesn't get in. Another thing which I'm sure never happens in your household or in your temple is that pile in the kitchen sink of unwashed dishes. You know the kind where there's sort of egg all congealed and hardened on the plates, and it's kind of icky. And so we go to the cupboard and get out a clean plate and a new cup. In our house, we go through 20 cups a day because we drink so much tea. And that's, I mean, not me by myself, but when there's somebody with me. Pretty well, though. And I keep on getting out a clean cup because the one that's sitting in the sink looks grungy and probably the tea won't taste as well. Do you remember the Mad Hatter's tea party in Alice in Wonderland? Remember, it was always tea time, so they had to keep on having tea, and they were sitting and the whole table had teacups, but then they kept on moving down, and only the person at the end of the line got a clean cup because everybody else moved down to a dirty cup, and in the end they would come back to the very first dirty cup. Sometimes life feels a bit that way. And I think the teacups in our lives, the dirty dishes, are the things we just haven't dealt with or put to finality. The little arguments that came up that we never really sorted out, that we've just let slide, but we've got a bit of a nasty feeling inside about that person. Or the apologies we know we should make but never have, and it's hardened on the plate. And the longer we leave that dish in the sink, the harder it is to get that egg off. You know that. You have to scrape. I think dirty dishes are very prevalent in our lives. It's easy to move on to something new. If we don't like what's happening here, we move on to another place. If we don't like this friend anymore, we go find a new friend. If we're tired of this dress, we buy a new one. We're that kind of society, and I think we do it with the dirty cups and dishes in the sink of our temple, if that doesn't sound sacrilegious. It's a habit we have. We ignore stuff that we don't really want to deal with. And we hope somebody, maybe Molly Maid will come in and clean the whole lot off one day, but it's not going to happen. And those dishes will sit there. And it feels so good when we get it into soapy hot water and we get it cleaned off. Life, oh, it just makes such a difference. You know that. When the kitchen's nice and sparkly again, we feel good. Don't let dirty dishes get in the way of our being a good host to the Lord when he comes to our temple. And now there's the very difficult one of cupboards. And this is why I'm not having Nancy for dinner. Because about 25 years ago, you may take notes. 25 years ago or so, Terry and Karen Somerville were expecting. It was a really special time. They actually had a baby boy, and they already had two little girls. And I believe Nancy was hosting a shower for Karen. And for some reason, which by now, after 25 years, I can't remember, the shower was going to be at my house. So you can imagine what I was doing the week before. Eh? It was even bigger than Tuesday night group because this was all these ladies coming to tea. But I had to be out of town. Now, I can't remember the circumstances, but that's how it was. They were coming to my house. They were going to have the shower for Karen. Nancy was the hostess. I was the house, but I wasn't there. Okay, so when I left, I cleaned everything. But you know how you say these things. I said to Nancy, "Hun, just don't let anybody look in my cupboards. You know, my cupboards are sacred. Eh? You close those doors and the stuff is hidden forever. Nobody needs to know that there are crumbs in the knife drawer and stuff like that." And Nancy, with big eyes, you know, said, "Oh, no, of course not." So I came back, and it turned out it was a very successful time, and that the shower was great. Everybody had a good time. And I didn't think any more about it until one day I opened a cupboard that I hadn't looked in for a while. And there on the top of the plates was a little dainty serviette with a stalk with a baby hanging in a diaper, you know, the kind we use at showers. And on it it said in ink, "We looked in this cupboard." I know you're finding this hard to believe. Well, four cupboards later, I had a little pile of serviettes, and it seems they had looked in all of my cupboards, which I thought was actually a really cute trick. But, you know, we do have places in our homes, in our lives, that we don't want anybody else to see. We really do. I had two friends who had a secret agreement that if one died, her friend would not stop to grieve until she had rushed to her house and cleaned out a particular drawer in the kitchen, which had all this junk in it that she didn't want anybody to see. We all have secret cupboards in our homes. And I think we all have secret cupboards in the temple that is the Lord's dwelling place. Hidden stuff that just destroys our peace, that rests with us, and that we sometimes think even God is not going to go downstairs and look in that cupboard. We kid ourselves. Secrets that we cannot really tell anyone else. If we're going to open the doors to him and say, "Come on in, this is your temple. I want you to be my special guest. This is your place. I want you to live here. I want to be a part of you. I want you to be a part of me." We have to say, "Okay, Lord, this is who I am. The cupboard's open. It's not nice, but the wonderful thing is, he's not horrified by what's in our cupboards. He's there to get rid of it for us. And I think all that stuff goes to the Valley of Kidron. Was that what it was? That wonderful garbage dump where it can all go, because Jesus told us that. He told us there was nothing that he could not forgive us for or cleanse us from. And then, like Hezekiah, when we've done that, when we've said, come in through the door, got rid of the dust bunnies, never always going to happen. They're going to come back, but he will be there. The mud, I'm going to try and not walk in those dirty places anymore. The dishes, I'm going to try and deal with them as they get soiled. The cupboard, Lord, it's open. Help me to get it, keep it clean and tidy. Then we can be like Hezekiah, and we can go into the temple and we can worship and we can sing. And it said, with gladness they came before the Lord and worshipped. And we can too. And I'm just thinking of the lady who used to be in a commercial for something. It's a long time ago, with the white glove. Remember her? And she'd go along the furniture like this to see how clean your house was. And whatever it was she was advertising was obviously going to get it clean. But we'll feel almost as if we've passed that test. Because the resident, the special guest who will have come in, will also be in control and help us to keep things pure and clean. And so I'd like to close just with this thought from Psalm 51. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. May that spirit that dwells in our temple find a place of worship and joy and gladness, because we've made him welcome. And we want him to come in. Amen.